going to continue with the explanation of this second Mishnah. Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omeid Al HaTorah Al HaAvoda Ve'al Gemilus Chasodim. Sfas Emes points out that it doesn't say Al HaTorah Avoda Ve'Gemilus Chasodim, but it says Al HaTorah, the Al HaAvoda, the Al. He says that implies that not at all times are all three present for the world to exist on all three, but the world at different times exists on the different of those three. But you need at least one of the three to keep the world going. The in fact, the Netziv says somewhere that since the Beis HaMikdash is no longer here, so the Torah that we have is very much diminished, and the Avoda is diminished because the main Avoda was sacrifices, and now the prayers have taken the place of sacrifice, but it's still not the same thing. The only one left in its full amount, and perhaps even more important, is Gemilus Chasodim, because of the situation that is not the ideal, people need each other even more. So, to a certain degree, what Klal Yisrael exists on today is Gemilus Chasodim. So, therefore, it's not all three different times, different ones of them are that which the world stands on, and like the Netziv says today, the Gemilus Chasodim is perhaps the most important. I think he says that's why the bracha that Yaakov Avinu got was Yitzchak thinking that he was Esav, because Esav didn't have Torah and he didn't have Avoda, but at least Gemilus Chasodim, and that's what Klal Yisrael needed, the major bracha, that in the time when the Torah would be diminished and the Avoda would be diminished, at least the Gemilus Chasodim would still be there. The Ruach Chaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, says that Torah, Avoda, and Gemilus Chasodim corresponds to the three dimensions that a person functions on. And that is, Torah is thought, Avoda, a Torah is speech, Avoda is thought, Avoda Shebelev, Avoda is tefillah and korbanos, so the main thing is the intention that you have when you daven. And the Gemilus Chasodim is Maisa, is action. And that is something that we find all over. To mention it briefly, we could go into a lot of detail into it. The Torah says that the Torah has to be kept b'ficha u'bilvavcha la'asoso, in your mouth, in your heart, to do. And the Mefarshim explain that that implies what we just said. B'ficha is speech, bilvavcha in your heart is thought, and la'asoso is action. And we fulfill mitzvahs on all three levels, speech, thought, and action, and even our Yomim Tovim follow that order, because if you think about it, well, first of all, let me explain to you why it's in that order. If I were to ask you to put into a logical order thought, speech, action, which order would you put it in? What? Which, the way I said it, thought, why? Because that is the most, right? Right. Thought brings you to speak, and speech is a little bit more of a physical thing than thought. Thought is very removed from the physical world. Speech is a little bit closer to the physical world, and action is the physical world. Or I would say the other way. Action, then speech, then thought, going higher and higher from the physical to the spiritual. But the Torah doesn't say either of those. The Torah says b'ficha, speech, then bilvavcha, thought, then action. Speech, thought, action. Why? So I was thinking perhaps the idea is the following. There are really two kinds of thought. The first kind of thought really doesn't count. It's only the second kind of thought that counts. And that means the following. The first kind of thought is like the brainstorm in the comic books, the light bulb that lights up above the person's head. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he got this idea. It's not in words. It's not something that you can define. It's very undefined. Just an idea that hits you. How do you define that idea? By speaking it out. You verbalize it. By verbalizing it, then you make it into a real concrete thought. And then you can put it into action. So even though thought comes first, this idea, this hashra'ah, what is that called in English? Revelation, inspiration. You're inspired with, but you can't really put it into words. It's not really, it's very nebulous, very undefined. And then you define it by speaking it out. And then it becomes a defined, crystallized thought. That on that thought now you can act. So therefore, the first thought really doesn't count, because if you don't carry further, it's just lost. That first brainstorm inspiration is lost if you don't do something with it. So the really first level is speaking out those thoughts and crystallizing them and defining them. And then you have a real thought, and then you can put it into action. So that's the order of the Torah. Beficha, first with your mouth, then belevavcha, then in your heart, in your mind, and then la'asoso, and then to do it. And that's why we make a bracha.
Can I just add something?
Yeah.
That when you say dovar, diber, it means it becomes concrete, it becomes a thing.
That's worth writing down. Right. Okay. Yes.
Speech, thought, the heart. So sometimes you feel it first before you say it, before you think it.
Yeah, you have this, right.
I feel like you feel it and then you think it.
Okay, maybe you. Okay, it's just this feeling, this all nebulous kind of idea. And then you crystallize that idea, and then you have a crystallized idea. The way you crystallize it, by verbalizing it. Okay. And that is really how we do a mitzvah. We make a bracha, which is speech. The bracha is supposed to make us concentrate on what exactly the mitzvah is all about. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu. We mention God's name on the bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam. And then that Asher Kiddushanu, mitzvah is supposed to bring me Kedusha, and it's a command, and what that mitzvah is, what am I supposed to do? So I verbalize all the ideas behind the mitzvah, and then I am able, when I do the mitzvah, to have the right intentions while I'm doing it, so I have thought and action. So all of those are put into play whenever you do a mitzvah, which you speak the bracha. The bracha gets you to crystallize what the thoughts behind the mitzvah are, and then to actually do it. Okay. In any case, the Yomim Tovim follow that order. Pesach, the name itself, they say, Pesach, a mouth that speaks. Right? Basically, Pesach, you are using your mouth, beficha. Okay? Either you're talking or you're eating. That is the Seder. Okay? Nothing more. Right? Either eat or talk. You're either things are going into your mouth or they're coming out of your mouth. One of the two. And it all revolves around Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and everything is with the mouth, right? To basically crystallize your emunah. That's what Pesach is all about. To speak out, right, what it is that I believe in, and to speak out the fact that God took us out of Mitzrayim. What is our purpose? What are we here for, or whatever? Then comes Shavuos. Shavuos is Bilvavcha. There are no Maisa HaMitzvos. There are no mitzvahs to actually do on Shavuos, just to keep Yontif. their customs, which maybe we'll speak about as we get closer to Shavuos, but there are no mitzvos maisios, there's no eating matzah, and there's no waving an estrog and lulav and so on. They're just keeping yontif. And there is no specific speaking on Shavuos. Shavuos is to commemorate and relive the acceptance of the Torah which was in our heart. They accepted the Torah in their heart. They said Nasa v'nishma, but it really meant what they... What? Right, b'levechot, right, exactly. One heart. Kabbalah ha-mitzvahs depends on the heart. And that's why a woman who has greater heart wisdom, Bina is balei, the same b'libeinu l'havin. Bina yaseira nitna ba'isha, a woman was given extra bina. That's why a woman is able to accept the mitzvahs and commit herself to mitzvahs a year earlier than a man. A woman becomes bas mitzvah at 12, whereas a man has to wait till 13. The reason the Gemara says is because bina yaseira nitna ba'isha, because women were given an extra measure of bina, which is in the heart. So Kabbalah Satorah is in the heart, and that's why, when it came to Kabbalah Satorah, the women were approached first, and according to the Marsha, only, meaning the following. It says, Kosomar Lebeis Yaakov, this is what you should say. Tomar is softly, gently, say Beis Yaakov is the women. Kosomar Lebeis Yaakov, that's why the Beis Yaakov movement was called Beis Yaakov, because of this medrash. Say to the women, that's Beis Yaakov, the household of Yaakov. The woman is the house. La'olam lo karasi le'ishti ishti, the Gemara says, I never called my wife wife, I called her my home. She is the home. So woman creates the environment of the home. So Beis Yaakov is the women. And speak to them softly, gently. And see if you can convince them to accept the Torah, commit themselves to the Torah. And then the Sageid Livnei Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, those are the men. The Sageid means to speak to them harshly, strongly, not softly and gently, the opposite. The Sageid, Dvorim Koshim, Kegidim, things as strong as Sinu, that's to the men. So everyone thinks that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke twice. Once he spoke to the women gently and calmly, softly, and then he spoke to the men harshly, strongly, and so on. The Marsha says we don't find that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke twice. He came down from the mountain and he said what he had to say. And in fact, it says, "Kosomar eila hadvarim asher tedaber al bnei Yisrael lo pachos v'lo yoser." Don't add a word or subtract a word. Say exactly what I told you, Moshe Rabbeinu. He came down and he said exactly one thing. One paragraph. So it doesn't say that he said it once to the men, then he said to the women, or he said something different to this one, different to... He was supposed to say specific words, not more or less, and he said what he had to say. So what did he do? He yelled it at the men and said it softly to the women. What's the idea? Says the Marsha, no, it means something else completely different. Kosomar lebeis Yaakov, you Moshe Rabbeinu go and gently and softly tell the women what I told you, and try to convince them to agree to accept the Torah. And then, if you are successful, the Sageid, every woman, will go. And she will relate it to her husband and her children, to her neighbors. The Sageid, and not so softly and gently as you put it, they will go and make sure that they get the message across to their husbands and children in a very harsh and strong way to make sure they accept the Torah. All you have to do is convince the women. If the women are on your side, then they'll take care of convincing the men. If the women are on your side, not going to help to do with the men. The women have the power of persuasion, of influence in Klal Yisrael, for the good or for the bad. As it says in the Pasuk, Chochmas Isha Bon Sabesa, the wisdom of a woman can build her home, the Ivelis Biodeha Ta'arsena, and a foolish woman destroys her home. And the Medrash says, you can see the difference between Ashes Korach, the wife of Korach, and Ashes Ben Pelas. Korach what influenced him to make a machlokes against Moshe Rabbeinu, his wife, came home and told her what happened, and she said, Moshe Rabbeinu, she said, you know, Moshe shaved all the Levium from head to toe, picked us up, and waved us like a lulav in order to consecrate us. She said, Moshe Rabbeinu is making a fool out of you. He said, no, but he did it to himself too. She said, he's willing to make a fool out of himself just to make a fool out of you. And she got him really, really upset, and that's what initiated the machlokas of Korach, Ashes Korach, the woman behind the man. And the opposite was true with Om Ben Peles. Om Ben Peles was part of the plot together with Korach, and he came home, and he also told his wife what's going on. He said, wow, big things are going on. We're all having a rebellion against Moshe. She said, you idiot. What are you going to gain out of this? If Aaron wins, he is the Kohen Gadol. If Korach wins, then he's the Kohen Gadol. And in either case, you remain Om Ben Peles. What are you getting involved in something that you have nothing to gain from? She said, yeah, but I gave my word. You know, I can't back out now. She said, we'll see. She got him drunk, put him to sleep, and when they came to get him, right, his friends came to get him to bring him to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu for the big meeting, so she took off her shekel, uncovered her hair, and these are frum people, they're not going to go deal with a woman whose hair is uncovered, so they came to the porch, she's sitting on the porch, and in front of their tent, I guess, And they said, no, where's Om Ben Peles? We came to get him. She said, he's not going. And they obviously didn't want to spend too much time talking to a woman with her hair uncovered, so they left. They left him asleep in the bed, and she stood there and guarded him to make sure he wouldn't leave. And then when the earth opened up and all those people who were involved started rolling towards the opening, Om Ben Peles rolled off the bed and started rolling out the door. And his wife turned heavenward and she said, Rabbona Shel Olam, is this fair? Lamaisa, I stopped him from going. Right? Is this what my reward's going to be, that my husband's going to be swallowed up anyway? And he stopped rolling and stayed alive. So his wife saved his life. So women can either be the ruin of their husbands, or women can be the savior of their husbands. And that is the job of a Jewish mother, a Jewish wife, to influence her husband, influence her children. And women throughout history have excelled in that, or have, I know in communal life, right, if women are involved in a machlokes, you don't have a chance. And if you can convince the women to get out of the machlokas, then you can take the machlokas away. Yes. Wait a second. I vaguely see that there's somebody raising their hand. Yes. Ah.
Where did the stupid custom come from that Jewish girls were not supposed to get an education? This comes from Europe.
First of all, didn't come from Europe. Europe was relatively short time ago, okay? Just to tell you a little story about Europe. We used to have bar mitzvahs. Before I was the rabbi in the shul in Miami, I grew up in that kehillah. And I was about 17, 18 years old, and I used to come back for vacation time. And I used to learn in the shul. It was a Sunday morning, and they had a Sunday morning bar mitzvah because the people obviously could not have a Shabbos bar mitzvah because they weren't Shabbos observers, and they didn't allow people where there would be a lot of desecration of Shabbos in the shul to make a Shabbos bar mitzvah. So it was a Rosh Chodesh on a Sunday, and they made the bar mitzvah on Sunday. And I was sitting in the back of the shul learning Gemara, Talmud, and the people who were at this bar mitzvah, I don't think were ever in a shul, surely not in an Orthodox shul in their life. And I get this feeling like I'm being watched. And I look up from my Gemara, and sure enough, there's a person staring at me. So I said to him, can I help you? He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm learning Talmud. He said, wow, you're how old? A teenager? And you can make head or tails of that big book with those crazy looking letters? He said, I'm over 40 and I don't know the Hebrew alphabet. I said, don't despair. You should know that Rabbi Akiva was over 40 and he also hadn't learned. And he began to learn at 40 and he became one of the greatest sages of the Jewish people. And the man looked at me and he said, Rabbi, Europe was different. In any case, Rabbi Akiva didn't live in Europe, and Europe wasn't different. In any case, Jewish girls never had a situation where they didn't have an education.
No, I've heard that this.
They didn't have a formal education. What?
I've heard this many times from many women.
Okay.
They were told they don't need an education.
Okay, that's.
And I'll never forget this. I was involved with the guy that was trying to make set up a scholarship fund. And he tells me in Yiddish, is Tunis life a maidla?
Okay.
I thought to myself, you're an idiot. Who raises the kids?
Okay.
What are you talking about? How many years ago? I was born in Europe.
1 second.
I went to school. I went to Polish school in the daytime. I went
okay,
to
the
Yiddish.
You're confusing two things. Okay. And the truth is that it can be, it did become to a certain degree distorted. Women never had a formal education. The education they got was in the home from their mothers almost by osmosis. And the women knew perhaps more about halacha and perhaps more about hashkafa than they know today learning it in school. They got it because their mothers got it from their mothers, who got it from their mothers, and there was always a very strong understanding of what a woman had to know to run a Jewish home and to raise Jewish children. And women did it for centuries without a formal education, because the kind of education a woman needed, she got from her mother, her grandmother, and so on, in a very, very excellent way, perhaps even more and better than they get it in school today. Because what they get in school today is a lot of superfluous things that a woman doesn't need to know, and the things that a woman really needs to know maybe aren't taught in the schools today. But that's a separate thing. So you're right. There was not a formal, institutionalized educational system for women. But that doesn't mean women were not educated. They were educated in the home. What happened about 120, 130 years ago, Sarah Schneerer saw what?
It was in the
1920s? Okay, so what, 100 years ago, 100 years ago, that she saw that the Jewish home wasn't as strong as it used to be. There were many, many outside influences, that girls were more influenced by the outside than the inside. Girls were being sent for institutionalized learning in secular studies, in gymnasiums, and they weren't having any institutionalized Jewish studies, and therefore she said things have changed, and a woman can no longer get the education she needs from her home. Times have changed. Not women have changed, not the Torah has changed, but the circumstances have changed. And what used to be unnecessary, because women were able to get almost by osmosis the education they needed to raise a family and to create a Jewish home, that didn't exist anymore. And many, many Jewish women were going off the derech completely and not being able to raise Jewish homes. So therefore, she went to the Gedolim of the time, the Chofetz Chaim, the Ger Rebbe, and she pleaded her case, and they agreed with her that circumstances had changed, that now it was necessary as an emergency measure to have institutionalized learning for girls, because the other kind of home learning, not institutionalized, but rather what a woman got automatically from her mother and grandmother, didn't exist anymore in a way that could be significant. So you're right, there was no institutionalized learning for girls, not only in Europe, but by Sfardim, in Middle Eastern countries, all over, for centuries. because not because women weren't supposed to be educated, because they didn't need to be educated in that way, and because their education for what they had to do in bringing up children and creating a home was more important, what they learned in the home, than that we would learn in school. But those situations changed, and it became necessary to create institutionalized learning for girls, and that's what we have today. But it's not because anyone held that girls didn't need to be educated. The question was what they needed to be educated in and how that education got to them. There are very stupid people in this world, you're right, who understood that in a distorted way and felt that women don't need any kind of education, which is absurd. But because of that distortion, that's why it was necessary to give women an institutionalized education, because people were ignoring completely the real kind of education that girls and women got. Okay? Where were we? Okay, so Shavuos, that's why I got off the tangent. That Kabbalah HaTorah, accepting and receiving the Torah, is in the heart. It's a wisdom of the heart. It's not a wisdom of the mind. You don't have to be a genius in intellectual knowledge to accept the Torah. In fact, you can be a genius in intellectual knowledge and not accept the Torah. The example I always like to give is about 100 years ago, there was a yeshiva in Lithuania that had four levels of classes. This person that I'm referring to was in the fifth level in a class of his own, literally, together with the Rosh Yeshiva's son. And he was a genius. And everyone thought that he was going to be one of the future stars of the Jewish people. And again, he was... They used to have a shiur Friday night, all night, him, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva's son. Until one day, they found him poring over a tome of the Talmud, writing his notes, smoking a cigar, and it happened to be Shabbos. And they asked him to leave the yeshiva, and he went on to emigrate to America and became one of the leaders of the conservative movement. I'm not going to tell you his name, but he was a famous person. My Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Gifter, said, now I gave away which yeshiva it was, okay, in any case, that he knew of him when he was in Telz. He was a young bacher at the time, and he heard him speak after he went to America and became one of the heads of the conservative movement, and he said he really lost what he had then. Wasn't the same person. But in any case, he had a lot of intellectual knowledge, but he wasn't mekabel the Torah. He was a Machal Shabbos. He didn't. The Torah made no impression on him. And you can be a very unintellectual person and not learn all the intellectual kinds of learning and have a heart that accepts the Torah, whatever. And there are many Noshim Tzidkaniyos like that, and men also like that. So Shavuos is Kabbalah HaTorah. That's where the women played a very, very pivotal role, because the women don't necessarily have or need the institutionalized intellectual learning, for the most part. There are exceptions. But their learning is more the learning of the heart, of what it's all about, what Torah is, that they're supposed to imbue in their children, influence their husbands, influence the Jewish people with their heart, and that is pretty much the difference between an Av and an Ein. An Av is Aleph Beis. Aleph Beis is a mathematical progression, 1 to 2 to 3, very logical, right, analytical. That's a man's kind of learning. That's what he's supposed to teach his children. He's supposed to teach them intellectual learning, textbook learning. That's what a man is required to teach his children. Aim is a different kind of progression. Aleph to Mem, which is the middle of the Aleph base, and then if you continue that progression, beginning to middle, middle to end, is Emes. Aleph, Mem, Tav. That's what a mother gives the truth to her children. Not book learning, not facts, but inspiration. That's the mother's contribution. You need both of them. So the women were more involved in Kabbalah Satorah even than the men. They were approached first, according to the Maharsha only, and they're the ones who were supposed to influence their husbands and their children. And that is Shavuos. So Shavuos is the heart. Not action, not speech, heart. And then comes Sukkos. Sukkos is all action. You sit in the sukkah and you wave the esrog and lulav and you march around and you dance with the Torah. All of these things are mitzvos, maisios. They're actual physical actions of fulfilling the Torah. So the three yomim tovim is Pesach is b'ficha, Shavuos is bilvavcha, and Sukkos is la'asoso. So those again are the three dimensions that we mention in the Mishnah. Torah is speech, avoda is the heart, and gemilus chasodim is action. In another dimension, Torah is what you do for yourself. You learn Torah so you can be a better person and fulfill the mitzvahs and do what God's will is. So Torah is what the person does for himself. Avoda is what's it called? Is what you do for God, right? Because you daven to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you serve God. Avoda is service of God. So that's between you and God. Torah is between you and yourself. Avoda is between you and God. And Gemilus Chasadim is between you and other people. Those are another three dimensions. Between man and himself, between man and God, between man and his fellow men. And they also have a connection to three other dimensions. There are three major midos, character traits of God, that the three avos emulated to the extreme, to the ideal. Those three midos are chesed, givura, and tiferes. Kindness, Avraham Avinu emulated God's kindness. He was the Amud HaChesed. Yitzchak Avinu was a sacrifice to God. He was Gevura. Gevura means self-control, strength of character. Chesed is totally giving. Gevura is Tzimtzum, holding yourself back, relegating yourself within a framework. And Tiferes is the synthesis between the two. Between chesed and gevura, taking those two extremes and making them the emes. Tiferes and emes, emes, Yaakov Avinu is emes. So chesed is gemilus chasodim. And gevura is avoda. Service of God is gevura. And tiferes is Torah. Emes, that's Torah. So Torah, avoda, gemilus chasodim represent these three attributes of God that the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov emulated. It also corresponds to another three dimensions. The world was created on three dimensions. There was Olam HaYetzira, and there's Olam HaAsiya, and Olam HaBriya, three levels, Yetzira, or Atzilus, Briya, Yetzira, Asiya, but the main three of them, once there was a world, is Yetzira. Yetzira means where the world was formed, but not yet put into actuality, and then Briya, the actual creation of the world, and then Asiya, the physical world. So the world of thought, Yetzira, is pretty much Avoda. The world of Bria is the Torah. The world was created for the sake of the Torah, and the Torah was used as the blueprint for the creation of the world. And then there's Asiya, the actual putting it into practice, that's Gemilus Chasadim. Okay. Others say it a little bit differently. Torah is what we receive from God. Avoda is what we ask from God. And Gemilus Chasadim is what we give to others. We receive from God, we ask from God, and we are responsible to give to others. Okay.
I'm sorry?
Yes. Avoda is making sacrifices, and what we have today is similar as prayer. Prayer is our dependence on God, our feeling. That's what Avoda. Avoda means you serve God like an eved, like a servant. And a servant realizes that he needs his master for his entire existence. And therefore he serves his master so he will be able to exist. So asking from God is tefillah, is davening. That's avoda. Right. To need him for our sake. Right. For our sake. Okay. Those are pretty much the various explanations of this Mishnah, but we're not finished. What I plan to do over the next till Shavuos is to speak about these things in great detail. What is Torah? What is Avoda? And what is Gemilas Chasadim? And that will be our preparation for Shavuos. I'll tell you why. Because, obviously, understanding what Torah is all about says the world stands on the Torah. Why? How does that work? How does the Torah become the foundation of all the world? So that's what we'll discuss first. And then we'll discuss Gemilus Chasadim, what is it? What is Gemilus? How important is Gemilus Chasadim? We understand Gemilus Chasadim be kindnesses. You do something for somebody else, very nice. But we'll see that the sources tell us that Gemilus Chasadim is related to Emunah. If you do kindness to other people, then you believe in God. If not, it's like you don't believe in God. What does one thing have to do with the other one? We'll see that Gemilus Chasadim is much more than just being a nice person and helping other people. Goes way beyond that. That's, we'll understand, and that's also important for Shavuos, because Torah and Gemilus Chasadim go together to the point where, what do we read on Shavuos? Megillas Rus. Megillas Rus, according to one Medrash, the entire idea of Rus is Gemilus Chesed, showing the chesed of Boaz to Ruth and Ruth to her mother-in-law, whatever, right? And a woman who could do chesed with her mother-in-law is really something special. And I don't like that smile. The
we all
right, that's true also. And wait 1 second. And it says that the Torah begins with chesed and ends with chesed. So Chesed and Torah also go together, and so the Shavuos have a connection to Gemilas Chasadim. And Avoda, we will makabel the mitzvahs of the Torah, and that includes davening and making korbanos, which is also part of what Shavuos is. So understanding these things will not only help us understand this Mishnah better, of how the world stands on Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim, if we understand them in their full meaning, that will also be the best preparation for Shavuos, where we're going to have to re-accept our yearly acceptance of the Torah. You have to appreciate the Torah. Torah begins with Gemilas Chasadim and ends with Gemilas Chasadim, and Shavuos has a part of it that is relegated to Gemilas Chasadim, which is Rus, so that's important for Shavuos. And Avoda, obviously, is Kabbalah Samitzvah, is also important. So that will be the manner that we will prepare for Shavuos over the next few weeks. Yes?
Going back to mother-in-law, I lived under the same roof in the same apartment with my mother-in-law for 35 years.
Okay. I was once stranded in Yerushalayim in a snowstorm for 4 days with my mother-in-law. I don't think what you said is any greater than what I said. The truth is, I had a very, very, very good mother-in-law who loved me like a son, and I mommy's loved her like a mother. So I can't make mother-in-law jokes about my mother-in-law. Right. Right. The what? Right. The first kind is just the inspiration, the brainstorm. It's just that really doesn't count. That we don't count. The second one is after you verbalize, crystallize quantify what that thought is by speaking it out and verbalizing it, then you've created a crystallized thought that now you can act upon. That's the second
part. That's where the thought comes in, the second part.
Could be. Could be. Okay. We will continue our session now.
Yeah.
Right. The Torah is what you do for yourself. Torah is how you deal with the Rabbanu Shlomo and what he wants from you and what you do for yourself.